I guess the best way to really describe it is everything just felt tight and very, very smooth.
What?
All right.
I really did. As I was saying that, I realized this. The sticks are tighter. That's what I'm trying to say. So
okay.
Everything just felt
smoother on the sticks.
Smoother on the sticks. Yeah.
Yes.
Alright, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 114, and we're going to do some Comic-Con talking, guys. How's everybody doing?
I think it feels like it's been forever and ever and ever since we've done this.
Been a really
I have
time.
Not done this in 3 weeks.
Oh, so yeah.
This is my first.
We've all been traveling.
Yes.
So getting us all here at the same time has been super sucky, but we're all here, so I'm super excited.
Mm-hmm. For a minute there, I thought you said super sexy, and I'm like, huh?
This is gonna be a super sexy episode.
This is the super sexiest episode we're ever gonna do.
Yeah.
I think we have a title.
So this is actually going to be kind of a two-parter for Comic-Con, right? We Ash was working his butt off during Comic-Con and got a ton of interviews with a bunch of people, and we're gonna kind of cut those together for everyone and do it next episode.
Yes, yeah. Just because there's too much. Unless you want a 3-hour episode, which no one would listen to.
It's too sexy. Too much sexiness.
Too much sexy.
Let's do the rundown.
I guess with that, we'll do a different kind of episode today. So we'll just talk about what we've been up to and all of our traveling and work shenanigans. And then we'll just talk about Comic-Con for a while. Because you guys were there. I wasn't there.
Oh, sorry.
So
you were there in spirit. Every time I saw an Admiral Akbar, I thought of you.
Oh,
soon,
thanks.
Yeah, soon.
Someday.
Did you hear that Adam from Mythbusters put together like a ridiculous Admiral Akbar suit, and that's what he wore on the floor of the con.
That's cool.
It's kind of amazing.
You may have seen him and taken pictures and not known it was him.
Wow.
Yeah, he had like the Admiral jacket and everything. So it wasn't like a traditional suit, but it looked ridiculous and the mask was amazing, of course. So.
Wow. Awesome. Yeah. That's in his wheelhouse after all.
Yes.
So Ash, what's been going on? Even though I know what's been going on, you're going to tell me anyways.
Yeah, so I'm finally home. I was gone for, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks vacationing with the wife, and then we went to Comic-Con and met up with Matt and his wife and some friends, and that was awesome. And I'm home, and I got the Comic-Con crud, as they call it, the con crud.
Nice.
I didn't really get
sick.
It
for,
no well I got mention. Okay, yeah, well this time I got it from my fucking roommate at Comic-Con, so if you're listening to this, thanks Comic-Con roommate. Yeah, so I was fine. I like, you know, I sanitized and everything. I didn't get it bad this year. No, like, shaking, no fever, no vomiting, nothing like that. This was just kind of like a minor head cold. And I also always take red eyes, like, out of cons, which is fucking stupid because people just breathe on you all night.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a bubble boy. So, yeah. So I got sick. but Comic-Con was a lot of fun. Visiting my family was a whole lot of fun. And I'm excited to, you know, get stuff rolling for the new batch of NA content coming out soon. So,
but you're still podcasting from a McDonald's just for old time's sake, right?
You know, the funny thing is I had to go back to that McDonald's because, not for myself, but, you know, I was up there visiting family, and my mom works remotely when she's up in the mountains too, and the internet went out, and she's like, shit, I need to like email this client about a contract. And I'm like, you can always go to the McDonald's. And so she was at the McDonald's, and I'm like, I just dropped her off. I'm like, you can go in and use it for a few minutes. And she called me, and she's like, you need to come in. My computer's not working. And I'm like, I can't go in there. I'm like a celebrity.
They're like, what is this guy doing?
I went back to that McDonald's again, and I was like, no one take pictures. No one look at me.
They should have given you a free chicken McNuggets.
Seriously.
Or a McFlurry.
Oh, yeah.
But Matt, why don't we hear your side of the traveling experience?
Well, I have not been home in a month.
That's amazing.
Which is kind of true. I was home. I was in New York for work in July 7th. And then I was home for 12 hours before going to California. I was in California until the 22nd, and then I was home for 12 hours before coming back to New York for what will hopefully be a big product launch by the time you hear this. And you'll know because there'll be news everywhere, but who knows. So it's good. I'm just exhausted. I've been working a lot, as we always say, but I actually, if you add the time now, have actually been working quite a bit. So it's good, though. But traveling, I'm actually amazed. No sickness, you know, knock on whatever wood is here. I've been on so many freaking airplanes and around so many people, and I have not gotten sick at this point.
Wow.
Good for you.
I got like a moderately scratchy voice on the day I got to New York. And I was like, oh, crap, it's going to happen. And then it was gone a day later. So I actually exercised at Comic-Con. I actually went down to the gym and went jogging in the morning and then like ate properly and stuff. So I think I've just been taking care of myself well enough.
How many other people were at the gym during Comic-Con?
It looked like a lot of business people that somehow were probably there doing promotion for other things at Comic-Con.
Fair enough.
There were not a lot of nerd shirts in the gym while I was working out. Uh-huh. It wasn't a lot of that.
Okay.
It was mostly professional looking people who seemed to have professional business going on later. Nice. That was about it.
Is it too much to say that we're the hardest working podcast in gaming? Not that we're working hard on the gaming part of the podcast, but we work really hard. And then we get together and do this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
This is our recess.
Exactly.
Yet we still work hard on this somehow too. So maybe we're just hard workers, Scott.
I think so.
Yeah. But yeah, I played I'm going to let Scott talk about it because I think he's probably played more, but I played a bunch of Halo Spartan Assault on my phone. It's an interesting experience on the phone, so I'm interested to hear what it is on the tablet.
Wow.
I played a lot of stuff on my tablet, played Middle Managers of Justice.
That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty fun, although I will be honest, I'm getting a little over the old tappity-tap games where you're just like, tap and wait. Tap and wait, like
there's
it's just
a
over and over again.
Micromanaging going on there, yeah.
And I started on the plane, I think, to New York. I don't know which one anymore. I started playing Sword and Sorcery. Right, is that what it's called?
Oh, cool.
That cool little like weird.
Yeah,
it's an awesome game. I love it so far. I haven't jumped back in. I was going to probably play it on the way home tomorrow.
Sweet.
So. But yeah, and then a bunch of Comic-Con goodness. So we'll talk about that later. But how about you, Scott?
All right, so like you said, I'm playing Halo Spartan Assault on the Microsoft Surface RT tablet, of
so
which
brand.
I'm like the only owner of this thing. So I
think
you know.
You are. They did take a $900 million loss on it. So
they did. Oh. Apparently, they've been selling them for like $100 at their developer conferences,
yeah.
And uh-huh. And now like if you're now it's like $350. And for a while, it was like price. $350 with a keyboard for free.
Yeah.
Wow.
They're dropping. They're just trying to get them sold. The $900 million loss was on stock, like on back stock of the product.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to refresh this thing like in the fall. There's going to probably be a new RT and a Pro. But
Anyways.
So Halo Spartan Assault is the game that should have launched with this Surface last October when it came out because it's that good. It's really good. So on the tablet, it's like a... it's got like virtual thumbsticks, but the screen is big enough where it's like not a big deal, you know, and you can reach all the controls, like all your weapon switching and grenade switching, all that stuff is like, you put your thumbs like in the corners to move the people around. But all of the buttons are sort of like underneath your thumbs, like tucked into the corner, but it works really well. So it's like a top down, twin stick shooter with virtual sticks.
It is arguably the best twin stick shooter I've played on a phone too.
Yes.
It works really well on the phone as well. Even though the screen is small, everything's bright, clear, easy to see, and done very well.
Yeah, and the soundtrack's really good, and like the audio's good, and the gameplay, like even on the Surface, is like super fluid and fast. The missions are kind of like on the short side, but I kind of prefer that for a for like a mobile kind of experience. So that's
I like
really
to call
good.
It a toilet game.
It is a toilet game, except I don't take my RT into the toilet too much. But
you're missing out, sir.
Yeah, I know. And then I also started playing Mass Effect 2. I started my Insanity run finally.
Nice.
Because I like to stay current on my games, obviously. But like as you guys know, I was not really high on the story of Mass Effect 2 when it came out because I didn't feel like it sort of celebrated the wonder of space. I kind of like think that it kind of went for that next gen look where everything is like red and gray, you know, throughout the whole game.
Yeah.
Right.
But coming back to it, I really do enjoy the combat. I still kind of stand by like my feeling about its approach to space in this game, but I am still enjoying the combat portion of the game. And then I realized that like in the design of this game, they really made this particular Mass like more about like the interpersonal relationships. So I kind of get it like in retrospect.
Did you also realize the Mako is terrible and that Mass 2 doesn't have it and that's what makes it a better game?
I still love the Mako.
You know, a lot of people love the Mako.
I know.
I'm not going to lie. I bought that Litho because I really love the Mako. Mm-hmm. I'm so stoked on it. Okay, so, and then the last thing that I will do to sort of cross promote is that I also, because I traveled, I went to Las Vegas for a convention for a couple of days and I started reading Ready Player One.
Awesome. I've been reading it for 2 weeks now.
Yeah, so that is for our listeners, that is our Goodreads book club book of the time period.
Yeah, what we're doing is I need to do the check-in. As you just heard, my schedule's been slightly crazy. But we are going to do probably a Google Hangout, I think is the most likely thing, towards the beginning of August. So if you want to get in on hanging out and talking about a book that it has to do with nerdery, yes, we're all reading Ready Player One, and we're going to do that soon, coming up. And there's a group. If you go to Goodreads, you can go to goodreads.com and then search for Nerd Appropriate. Our group will come up. We'll try to link it somewhere on the site, and you can join the group. It's free and all that kind of stuff, and we're going to talk about it. Got a bunch of members and some people already posting about that they've either already read it or that they're going to read it, and it's cool. I'm excited, but it's actually working. The thing we talked about doing this entire time is actually happening.
Yeah. Awesome. So it was a book that like you, I never got around to reading. So I'm about halfway through now and I'm really enjoying it. So hopefully we can get that Goodreads group going. And I kind of have some ideas for our next books too, which we'll talk about offline.
Sweet.
So Hillary, you've been working a lot.
I have. Actually, going back to what you were saying about books, I actually have the opportunity to read Children of Fire. Oh, I can't even talk. I'm like, I'm rusty, guys. Okay, let's start.
You'll be okay.
I actually got to read, I'm fine. Children of Fire by Drew Karpyshyn. I can't say his name properly.
Karpyshyn,
so he actually,
right?
Whatever you said. So I actually got a copy of his book and I'm reading it now. And it comes out August 27th. So I'm super excited to read it and put a review up about it. So cool. Look for that. I also finished The Last of Us, finally finished that game. And nice. I have a lot of feelings about it. So we're definitely going to have to talk about it on one of our future podcasts.
Lots of feels.
And I went to Comic-Con as well, working for BioWare. And I think my immune system is like made of like bionic, like
or biotics.
Stuff. I think that's what it is. I like have these like amazing biotics that I can like ward off all enemy sickness because I'm like literally okay. Super tired, but I didn't get sick.
That's
awesome. I don't usually get sick. So, haha.
You touched a lot of people at this trip too.
What?
I mean, out of context.
Wait, what?
No, I mean, every time I went by, this sounds horrible. Every time I went by Dark Horse, there were like lines of people and you were like
waiting to touch you.
I mean, that was pretty much it. There was lines
so
of people
that's
touching
why they
you.
Put me there is to have people touch me. I don't think so. so I shook a lot of people's hands and
that's
gave a lot of high fives.
That's what I that's what I was trying to say.
I
don't
know.
Okay, I did do a lot of that.
I did see that you were sporting some excellent Black Milk N7 prototypes that weekend as well.
So cool. So we got some prototypes of the new Black Milk stuff. There's leggings and a dress and a swimsuit. So we got a bunch of that kind of stuff we got to wear at the show. And I have to tell you, it's the excitement of other people that makes the whole thing like so incredible. People would just come up to us and like, because Jessica Marizan also was wearing them, and so was Holly Conrad. Mm-hmm. And Fiona too, who dressed up as Miranda one day. But we were all sporting our Black Milk stuff. And people were just like stopping us and taking pictures and asking when it's going to be released. I believe sometime mid-August. But yeah, it was just super cool to see how people got really, really excited about something like leggings, you know? So it was really cool.
It's a natural fit, I think. It's a smart move to make those. I think that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that N7 logo is like kind of amazing. So I would wear those leggings like every day.
Sweet.
But yeah. Yeah, and then aside from that, I'm working with BioWare on a couple events coming up in the next 2 months and beyond. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've been like super, super busy and kind of working like 18-hour days. It's kind of incredible. It's brutal. I do have another job outside of BioWare. So yeah, I'm just kind of hanging in there.
All right.
All right. But you know what else is really, really cool?
What's that?
News.
There was a lot of cool stuff at Comic-Con.
All right. It's been a couple of weeks, you guys. Just hang.
Dude,
just stay
I'm
with
so
us.
I'm so rusty. I'm so Comic-Con. Rusty.
So yeah, we went to Comic-Con 2013, and it was pretty fucking crazy this year. Bigger than ever, we hear, like over 130,000 people. We got pretty lucky. We had a hotel pretty close by, so we didn't have to do a whole lot of
pretty walking. Close.
Well, okay. It
part
was
of
basically
con.
Part of the con. So we got as lucky as you can get. And, beautiful hotel and a lot of experiences in the hotel alone.
You know what I thought was awesome was like how many people would wait in our lobby for us to come down out of the elevator. They were like, nerd appropriate and stuff. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, since our hotel was like the hotel where everybody that all the famous people were staying at because it was so close by, their paparazzi pretty much hung out at the bottom of the elevators. And so you'd walk out and feel really awesome for a few seconds.
Wow.
Like, yeah, we're at the cool hotel. But that was neat.
That's so cool.
We my friend Derek and I ran into Samuel L. Jackson in the lobby. And
he's going to be on 115, right?
He's going to be on 115. Yeah.
Oh, God.
came down on the elevator at the same time as us, different elevators. We didn't have the luxury of riding the elevator with him. But so a fan ran up to him as we were walking sort of a little bit behind him out of the hotel. And a fan runs up and goes, Mr. Jackson, can I have your autograph? And he just kind of looked at the fan and went, hell no, and kept walking.
Seriously?
Dead serious. It was awesome.
Better than an autograph.
It was hilarious. It was.
Yeah. Was he kidding or was he for
real? He was serious. He was not going to sign shit for people. It was great.
He walked off.
And he walked off, yeah. It was.
What?
Yeah.
That's so rude.
But it's Samuel L. Jackson. If he would have been nice, it would have spoiled the whole mystique of Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
He has to be like, hell no. So I guess we should start. Matt and I and our wives drove down from L.A. We went and visited family out in L.A. and Matt was there kind of vacationing for a few days. Then my wife and I flew into L.A. and then we drove down and I got there just in time for the Course of the Force ending ceremony and party. And it was cool. They invited Nerd Appropriate out there to take some pictures and to hang out and stuff like that. And it was neat because there were a lot of people that have been on the show. So it was really cool to run into familiar people. Like Ashley Eckstein was there, who's been on the show. And Allison Hayslip was there, who's been on the show. And Kerry Keegan was there, who's on the show. And it was all these people that like kind of are in our wheelhouse, if you will. And kind of in our universe of content who were there for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. So if you don't know what the Course of the Force is, they do this relay race all the way from San Francisco to San Diego. And the proceeds that they earn along the way for this relay race all goes to Make-A-Wish. And so we were there. We took some pictures. It was a lot of fun. It was weird because it was kind of a smaller event. And anytime I'm there, like taking pictures of things like that, I feel like super out of place because it feels kind of surreal. Because I'm a fan of like all these people and what they do, and then I'm there like kind of as press taking pictures and talking, and it's just a very kind of awkward but fun position to be in. So that was neat. That was kind of how I started off the con, and that was on Wednesday night?
Wednesday, yeah. We drove in Tuesday. Was that Tuesday night?
Shit, so that was Tuesday night. That's probably how we were able to get into that because we were the only press that were in town.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we drove in Tuesday night and stayed an extra night this time.
Yeah, yeah. So that was cool, and it's nice to feel part, even though, like I always say, we're a very, very small part of this big nerdy community. But it is nice to feel part of it, you know. So that was
awesome. I think my favorite part of Course of the Force was the 3-hour drive to LA or to San Diego from LA, listening to you explain what Course of the Force is to your wife and my wife at the same time. It's pretty amazing.
Great moods, because there's reasons. So I'm trying to explain.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're listening to me like I'm an alien. But
they're like, they just run from San Francisco to San Diego. It doesn't make any sense. And you're like, no, it's like a relay. And they're like, what do you mean it's a relay? And you're like, they don't want, it's not one guy running the entire state.
What's the fucking point? So the next thing that that was kind of a little strange, I went to this round table interview for this short film called The Sidekick, starring Lizzie Kaplan and Martin Starr, who I'm huge fans of from Freaks and Geeks and various other projects.
Party Down.
Party Down, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Party Down. And there's actually going to be some Party Down stuff on the audio recorded of this whole roundtable thing. So I think I asked some questions about Party Down. I can't remember because it feels like ages ago. But they were there promoting a short film called The Sidekick, which is sort of a satirical look at sidekicks in a very modern and real sort of setting. So what if superheroes and sidekicks existed in our, you know, in our own reality, and what happens when a superhero sidekick turns 40 years old and gets fired? Like, what skill sets and does a sidekick have? And I got to actually see the short film, which was actually really, really funny. As people like Jordan Peele in it, Martin Starr, Lizzie Kaplan, Jason Ritter, Seth Meyers' brother Josh Meyers is in it, who's actually super funny as well. And for those who haven't ever been part of a roundtable interview, it's really a strange experience because you sit around with a bunch of other journalists and it's a lot like doing a podcast in that you have to like wait your turn, wait for a break in the conversation, then ask your question. And it's basically like you working with people you don't normally work with to come up with a useful interview. So it's weird. It was like myself and a guy from Collider and a couple other websites much larger than our own all at this table kind of coming up with an interview together.
Larger than Nerd Appropriate?
No, that's a possibility. But
wow.
It was cool. I really enjoyed the Sidekick. I enjoyed, you know, talking to these super creative people. And I think this property, because the reason why they came up with the Sidekick was to try and turn it into a series for like Netflix or Hulu or whatever. So I think it's going to become something much larger than just this short film. So
awesome.
Keep your eyes on that one. Matt, tell me about the panel that everyone was talking about, the How I Met Your Mother panel.
Yeah, so weirdly, How I Met Your Mother was not in Hall H for unknown reasons to me. They put How I Met Your Mother in our hotel, in the Indigo Ballroom. It was like after there was Machinima, and then Geek and Sundry, which I'm going to talk about, and then How I Met Your Mother. So I got up at 7 a.m., went and got in line for How I Met Your Mother. Actually saw, I'm going to screw up his last name, Peter, blah, 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 Peter, forget his last name, from Slash Film on the way, and I had a really good discussion with him. And what I found really funny is I was talking to him about running a podcast and doing a site, and he was like, yeah, I'm going to get in my second shift for the Hall H line. He's like, no one gets a free pass at Comic-Con essentially, unless you're like, you know, EW or something probably. But yeah, so I got in line for How I Met Your Mother. We were there early enough that when I got in line, there was about 500 people, and that was at 7 a.m. And their panel wasn't until noon. We got into the first panel. The room holds about 2,500 people. By the time they were letting people into the room at about 9:30, that line had to already be over capacity for that room. It had to be well above 3,000 people in line to see How I Met Your Mother. And maybe Machinima and Geek and Sundry, but I'm pretty sure it was mostly How I Met Your Mother. This is the first panel they've ever done at Comic-Con. It's going to be the last because the last season is next year. And it was pretty awesome. They came in to a standing ovation that lasted pretty long and were just really great. Like, told a lot of stories and a lot of the creators. It was the creators as well as the full cast, the main crew. And yeah, Jason
Siegel. God.
Yes, thank you. Brain. Jason Siegel kind of ran the panel. Like, he was the funniest guy by far, sitting up there at the desk, and like, just, he just kept having like weird interjections that everybody was laughing at. And he made the weirdest faces, and he was, as happens at almost every panel, he noticed the sign language person and just started saying words for her to sign so that he could learn how to say different things in signing language, or in sign language. And it was humorous, but really great. The creators talked kind of about how the reason they wanted to do How I Met Your Mother, or what it kind of turned into, was more of a celebration of like joy. Whereas when you look at a lot of sitcoms, it's really kind of about negativity. Like, the point they made was, you know, the married couple always kind of is annoyed with each other. They always kind of like, you know, oh God, he's doing that again, kind of reaction to everything. Yeah. Or they're like, they don't laugh at each other's jokes. And they talked about how Marshall and Lily, which is Jason and Allison Hannigan, right? Allison, yeah. Hannigan. It's their relationship. Like, are truly in love with each other and laugh at each other's jokes and are always there for each other. They're never like at each other's throats unless there's a real story reason for it. It's not just like, you know, done for comedic effect kind of thing. And they talked about that. They talked about how they really got to grow this kind of friendship over 7 years. And I would totally agree. I've watched all the seasons. My wife and I are large fans, not huge. And,
huge fan.
And, nice. We really, you know, enjoy it for those reasons. Like, it really is a fun show about friends and about, you know, them going through their 20s and 30s and that thing. And the funniest part about it is they opened up. I've had this kind of theory that all of the shots of the kids in How I Met Your Mother, the kids that Bob Saget's talking to, were shot the first season, and they just reuse reaction shots essentially over and over again. And they opened up the whole panel with this video short of the kids, but it's of the kids now, and they're both in their mid-20s at this point. Like, the dude looks way different. He like clearly grew like 8 years, like, you know, from the early show to now. And the girl looks older too, and then they go on this like crazy tirade about how Bob Saget or their dad has locked them in that room for 8 years and has just been telling a story about all the sluts that he's banged, and like it's literally how they word it. It was like really funny because I had tweeted like, you know, maybe I'll get up and ask if I can get in line, I'll ask a question. Does anybody have questions? And I forget who, one of our listeners tweeted back and said that, like, ask him how many girls he's gonna have sex with before they finally tell us who the damn mother is, you know, like, 'cause that's kind of the ongoing gag. Mm-hmm. And they addressed it immediately in this opening video, and it was just done with such like great like self-deprecating humor for the show. And the kid talks about how he's like I haven't left this room in 8 years, my sister's starting to look good, and then she like gives him this like nasty look, and she's like, I've had to pee in a can, and like, you won't even let us use the bathroom. And it was just like really funny jokes, and it was good. They did a really great job. They sang Let's Go to the Mall with the entire crowd. So there was like 3,000 people singing the Robin Sparkle song, if you're familiar with the show, called Let's Go to the Mall. And that was funny. It was just great. I mean, it was a really good panel, really fun. I'm glad I got to see it. It's kind of one of those, you know, you're not going to ever see it again. And thank gods the Comic-Con put How I Met Your Mother in a reasonable room to get into, yeah, and not Hall H.
Awesome. It's so awesome.
I felt really bad. There was a mom in a How I Met Your Mother shirt that came up with like kids to the room at like 11:30, and the panel's at noon. And I had gone out to go to the bathroom, and she walks up to the Comic-Con staff. She's like, "Is this where How I Met Your Mother is?" Oh, and the guy was like, the guy looked at her and was like, "Yeah, but there's a line." And he like pointed outside, and the line was still like wrapping around the building. So, you know, then the panel ended and the entire room left. It was like, 3/4 of the room was gone after they left.
I mean, I can't imagine going to Comic-Con for the first time, like now to Comic-Con, with like no like guidance.
Right.
Like, you would have no clue like where anything was or how to do anything. There's like so many tricks to it, you know.
I did wait, one more anecdotal story. Sorry, I know this is the longest one, but I went to get coffee. Melissa got down to the line like at 7:20 or something, and I was like, all right, I'm going to get coffee. I waited in a 45, maybe 50 minutes in line for Starbucks. And I was the second to next, like I was like the next person after one more person. And Melissa texted me and said the line is moving, and I had to leave the Starbucks line with no coffee in hand and go back to get in line. And then the line didn't move all the way into the building. I was like, no! So it was great. That Starbucks line is the craziest line, I think. I think it's worse than Hall H. Seriously, man. It's like they must make millions of dollars that Comic-Con weekend. They just flew like moving people through that line constantly.
They're pretty damn good at it too. There's like five people working, and it's insane how quickly they go.
It's their A players. You know it is, because every morning it's the same five people during Comic-Con, and they just pump people through the line. Anyways, Ash, what else did you do?
Did you get a chance to go to NerdHQ this year, Matt?
I couldn't find it, which is one of my pet peeves with it this year. But no,
Hillary, did you get a chance to walk down there this year?
I didn't. No.
So let me tell you guys about it. So if you've been listening to the show, you know that Zachary Levi and the Nerd Machine put on this thing called NerdHQ at Comic-Con, and it's about 4 days of intimate panels. And you know, they have photo booths and all sorts of food and things set up for you to go and do off-site. So you walk a little bit away from the con. It's been in a different location in the Gaslamp District in San Diego every single year. And this year, oddly enough, it was in Petco Park, which is the baseball stadium, which I wasn't a huge fan of because it only occupied like a small section of Petco Park. And obviously, they're not going to – they didn't put it down on the ground. So it was up in the – I don't even know where. Just off in the side someplace. But – they do these things called Conversations for a Cause, which benefit Operation Smile. So you spend about $22 on a ticket, and you get to see some of your favorite actors and producers and directors and people just give these small, you know, unmoderated panels, which have been awesome every single year. I mean, seriously, they're usually the highlight of my Comic-Con because it's, you know, 250 people is very, very small in comparison to Hall H, which has 6,500. So, you know, you get to see these people up close, and it's they're much more comfortable, and it's just nice. So this year I went to a couple of these. I went to one for the film I, Frankenstein, which has Yvonne Strahovski from Chuck and Aaron Eckhart from Dark Knight. And it's this weird – I mean, I didn't really know much about the film going into it. But I had a nice gap in my schedule and wanted to check out NerdHQ. So I'm like, I'll just buy a ticket to this and go check this out. So I was able to get into this. It was cool. I mean, it's a modern take on Frankenstein. Like, what happens to Frankenstein 200 years after the Frankenstein story? The thing that some people may love and some people may hate is it's done by the same team that did Underworld. Are you guys familiar with Underworld?
I am.
Familiar? Are you familiar with it, Hillary?
I am familiar.
Such a hater. God.
I'm not a hater.
it's this weird take on Frankenstein in that he's fighting like the armies of heaven and hell after the apocalypse because the demons want to figure out how Frankenstein's alive without a soul, because he's pieced together from the bodies of all these different people. So it's a unique and, I guess, very combat-heavy take on the Frankenstein franchise. Aaron Eckhart didn't want to be there. The most blatantly obvious thing. He looked just, like, angry the whole fucking time. I don't know. Like, he just kind of sat there, like, slumped in his chair, and people would ask him a question, and he'd give them, like, one-word answers. And, you know, it was something, I mean,
how rude.
It was weird. It was weird because normally the people that agree to do these are incredibly enthusiastic. But just, you know, maybe Aaron Eckhart's just not a very enthusiastic guy. I don't know. That's kind of, it just seemed like he just didn't want to be there. Interesting stuff. The prosthetics from the sound of it sound amazing. Like, they did a lot of really innovative work with both CG and prosthetics. And, he also learned he took 6 months off to learn a method of bow staff fighting. So it's going to be Frankenstein bow staff fighting demons, which is going to be different. but I'm intrigued to see it. So that was a little bit of NerdHQ. Hillary.
Yes.
Every time I went by Dark Horse, you were touching people.
As we learned.
Again with this. Again?
In a non-seductive way. I mean, just like high-fiving and shaking hands. And there was a constant line of people. It was always busy. So tell us about your experience surviving the floor for 4 days.
Yeah. So before I actually do that, I wanted to say something in contrast to Aaron Eckhart. I had the opportunity to meet Felicia Day at the Geek and Sundry party.
Oh, cool.
And she is the most gracious person ever. So, you know, Felicia Day is like big time. She's, you know, got a lot of clout and influencer and all of that. And she literally is one of the sweetest people. She just makes you feel like welcome. I don't know. So it was really cool to get to meet her.
Yeah, to back that up, Melissa met her in the Geek and Sundry bathroom. Like she was like washing her hands and Felicia Day was there and she was like, oh, hi, Felicia Day, like, and talked to her. And Felicia Day was like super nice in the bathroom of all places too. It was like, hey, how you doing? And like talked to her for a minute and then Melissa left.
That's
awesome. So yeah.
Yeah. No, she's such a nice person. It's just kind of amazing. And then also I got to meet Robert Kaczynski, who is in Pacific Rim and then also Warlow on True Blood. And he is like such a great guy. So fantastic. Super easygoing. Huge Mass Effect fan.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's a really great guy. So it's kind of neat to meet two really, you know, well-known people who are actually like real people.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a really cool experience.
Yeah, he introduced Rob to my wife and I, and he was very, very, like, I meet a lot of people at these shows, but he was super sincere and super warm and actually started asking us questions about Pacific Rim and stuff. He's like, so what'd you think of it? And I was just like, oh, he's legit. He's like a really nice dude.
Yeah, he's super sweet. So I'm really fortunate to have met both of those people. So yeah. So I'm sorry that you had a bad experience with Aaron Eckhart.
But perspective, I guess, you know.
Yeah. And Samuel L. Jackson. Hell no.
That was an awesome experience.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So yeah, so back to your question. Being at the BioWare mini base, I guess you'd call it. It was basically like a corner of the Dark Horse booth. We had such a great time spending time with the Dark Horse folks. They're amazing. Carrie Audro, who's their events person, is fantastic. Everybody there is just so sweet and so nice and so amazing to work with. But yeah, the BioWare desk, I call it, is was really packed, and it was really cool to see how many fans came out and, you know, said hi and wanted autographs and just wanted to chat with the devs about, you know, stuff. So it was really cool. So I'm glad that when you came by, it was super crowded and fun because we had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah,
speaking on my own behalf and certainly not on your behalf, can we get a Dark Horse app for Windows 8? I'm just putting it out into the ether. Maybe the right people.
I have no
idea. The right people will hear.
Talk to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Let me just call them up.
I'm not asking you to talk to them. I'm not speaking for you. I'm just saying if there were a Dark Horse Windows 8 app, I would greatly appreciate it.
Yeah.
Is there a Comixology app on Windows
8? There most certainly is.
Well, then there probably will be a Dark Horse app soon.
Just
saying. Dark Horse is amazing. Anyway, so one more thing. So my favorite thing that happened at Comic-Con, besides getting to work with BioWare, wearing the Black Milk stuff and meeting cool celebrities. Wow, that was a good trip, wasn't it? was getting to see the Assassin's Creed 4 ship, the Jackdaw, docked behind the convention center. And it was really cool because I was there with Fiona. I don't know if you guys know who Fiona is. She was wearing the Miranda costume at the base. And she and I went down to the Jackdaw. We got to watch Stone Chin, who's the PR manager at Ubisoft, set off the big cannon. So that was like a highlight because just seeing him like all nervous, like lighting the cannon and having it be this huge explosion.
That thing is so loud.
Oh, I know. And then hanging out with like the really good looking like Assassin's Creed actors was so fun. Like Blackbeard was like amazing, and Kenway was fantastic.
Those guys had great, like their costumes were impeccable. They were awesome,
and they were in character the whole time.
Huh.
It was amazing. Yeah, I don't know if they were there for the party, but they when we went on Sunday, they were absolutely just like in character, the accents and the whole thing, and you're just like, what? That was my favorite thing.
That kind of segues pretty well into my experience on the Jackdaw, and my wife and I were lucky enough to get invited to that Jackdaw Assassin's Creed party.
I'm so mad. I was going to go, and then they couldn't let us on board because it was over capacity and no one was getting off that ship.
Like, yeah.
you had to be there early because people just like went there and they stayed forever.
Well, the thing that's amazing about it is the ship is absolutely beautiful. And it's, you know, it's, I guess in San Diego most of the year, and it's like the oldest. It was built, I read all about it because I was fascinated by the ship. This is how nerdy I am. But it was built in like the late 1800s, and it's the oldest, I guess, the oldest sailing ship that's still seaworthy, that, you know, that's still there.
Well, so it's a museum, right?
Yeah, it's a museum most of the time. So they converted it into this, you know, pirate ship. They put a big Assassin's Creed sail on it, and they threw this awesome party on the Jackdaw. And it was so much fun. Like, I'm not like a big like industry party guy. Most of the time I just kind of stand in the corner like with my arms crossed and like watch everyone. But just the fact that we were on this old sailing ship, and it was so beautiful outside. It was like in the mid 60s, and everyone was dancing and having a good time, and there was like, you know, unlimited food, open bar. And then all of a sudden, like super famous people started showing up. Mm-hmm. And my wife is like, is that Henry Cavill, you know, Superman? And I'm like, yeah, that's Henry Cavill. And he had this like hulking, like super bodyguard next to him. No one could go near him, but he was like goofing around with his friends. And like, at one point he gave his friend like a wet willy, and then like Saturday Night Live cast members showed up, and it was just like a really fun experience, you know. And Hideo Kojima was there. The guys that did the Venture Brothers were there. And I'm like, I am not like, you know, one of the things that I'm always a fan, like before, you know, we do the website and everything like that for years and years and years now. But at these, when I see things like this happening, it's like almost too much for me because I'm like a fan of all this stuff, you know, and to be like in the same area as these people is just kind of surreal. But hats off to Ubisoft for putting together a really incredible party. The boat alone was like worth going to San Diego for. it was just awesome.
It was amazing.
And they had a station set up where you could actually play Assassin's Creed 4 actually on the PS4. So I got to do that, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But really, the Jackdaw party was fucking phenomenal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun.
On the note of your wife gawking at a famous person, I went to... I know you didn't say that, but you tweeted it earlier.
That's true.
Henry Cavill, right, is who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Melissa, we went to the Largo in L.A. to see Doug Loves Movies, like a live recording of Doug Loves Movies, and John Hamm was on the panel. And she swears she wasn't doing this, but I swear to God, every once in a while she'd just make these like kind of high-pitched sighing noises or like a giggle when he would say something. Like, he'd be like, because he's very funny, like a just regular very funny guy, and he'd say something, she'd be like but it was like noises she never makes otherwise. Like, I've never heard her laugh like that at anything. And then once in a while she'd be like, oh, like, what is happening next to me right now?
That's amazing.
But he is a beautiful, beautiful man, so I don't begrudge her that at all. So that aside, I went to the Geek and Sundry panel, and I wasn't sure what to expect, but they ended up announcing a bunch of new shows, and it was really awesome. It also basically was the Will Wheaton and Felicia Day show for the entire panel. The two of them just crack on each other constantly, and it is very funny. They seem to very much be friends, and it shows. But the show I'm probably most excited about they announced is called Outlands. And it's made by Adam De La Pena, who made a show called Code Monkeys, which you might have seen before.
Yeah, and
Code Monkeys is like, it was like done in 8-bit art style, kind of. It looks like a video game, like 8-bit or 16-bit graphics kind of thing. And it's got Dana Snyder from Aqua Teen Hunger Force and the Venture Brothers as the main voice for the show. And then I think Felicia Day is in it, as well as some other people. But it looks really funny. It's kind of about a ship that's job is to like go out and destroy planets, and then he says like 2 minutes into episode one the captain gets killed, and that just becomes this like rogue ship with no idea what they're supposed to be doing, with like a bunch of misfits for the crew essentially, and yeah, they just land on planets and get into mishaps. So
that's awesome.
Looks really funny. The other one was called Caper, and it's Amy Berg, who created or was co-creator of Eureka for sci-fi, made this show, and it's it was kind of, it looks like it's about superheroes, I guess. The preview didn't really let into too much other than it's kind of about superheroes who, because they're superheroes, don't have jobs. So they go into like crime to make money, but they're still superheroes, essentially. If that makes sense. So they still fight crime, but then they also like rob banks so that they can have money to continue to fight crime. So there's that. It sounded weird, but it's Amy Berg, so I'd be down. And the last one they previewed was called Spooked, and it's actually from Bryan Singer's production company, Bad Hat Harry. And it's a kind of comedic take on the paranormal investigation team shows. So it's live action, and it's a jokey, kind of goofy take on the shows that do the ghost hunting and all that kind of stuff. And it actually did make the audience laugh a couple times, so it seemed pretty good. I'm still pretty convinced that, with only a couple of exceptions, I think Geek and Sundry is really pushing the boundaries of what internet TV is, and I think it's pretty awesome. The shows looked great. And then they did a lot of talk about their vlogs too, which is this kind of idea where anybody can be part of Geek and Sundry, and they're voting in new people now, and they want to just kind of let people talk about their nerdy habits and things. So,
yeah, I know they just chose a group of new vloggers, which they actually brought to Comic-Con and paid for a lot of their stuff. And they're just honestly like normal kids who do vlogs. I mean, like, I know their cosplay girl is like from somewhere, nowhere, Canada, and like was like just super excited that she gets to be included in such a cool group of people.
Yeah, the girl who talks about, I don't remember their names, so you have to forgive me, but the girl who talks about comic books is actually Will Wheaton's comic book store, like the person who pulls his comics every week.
Oh, that's cool.
For him. And he just walked in, he was like, hey, this is when they were starting to launch vlogs, and he was like, hey, do you want to talk about comics like on the internet? And she was like, sure. And then she became one of their first vloggers because of it. So
very cool.
Kind of cool, but it was a good panel overall. And like I said, Outlands looked really funny. I'm actually very excited for that. And then the other shows look good, worth checking out, seeing what's going on. So
awesome.
That was Geek and Sundry.
Cool. Well, Will Wheaton was also on, he was the moderator.
Everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. But he was also the moderator for the Falling Skies panel that I... Okay, so very rarely...
I love this show.
But very rarely does a press pass really do all that much at big cons like Comic-Con. But this one, I just was like, fuck it. It was at capacity. I pulled up my press pass, and I like walked right into the Falling Skies panel. And the guy at the door just like nodded at me. I was like, okay. I was like, that's not supposed to fucking work. But it did. So I got to see this Falling Skies panel moderated by Will Wheaton. And, you know, one thing about this show... I would have never known about Falling Skies if it were not for Comic-Con, because the first time I ever heard about it, I was walking around, I think at like 6 a.m, and it was in the Gaslamp District, and Falling Skies had a coffee cart set up in the Gaslamp District, and they're handing out Falling Skies coffee.
Oh, wow.
And this is before the show ever aired, before the first season. And it was like the perfect thing at that time. So I grabbed a cup of coffee. I think I grabbed like 2 or 3. And I'm like, fuck it, I'll go check out their panel. And I've been a fan of the show ever since, really. I mean, it's kind of stupid that coffee turned me on to the show. But now I love the show. And if you haven't seen the show, it's a great, you know, of course, it's post-apocalyptic, alien invasion. And it's a story about a family and how they cope with, you know, life after the end of organized civilization, right?
But really quickly, Ash, if that kind of marketing didn't work, there would never be stuff like that. So good that you promoted that kind of marketing, because that's kind of what I do.
Good. No, I loved it. I mean, I thought it was great. It was silly, but it was like two really young, enthusiastic, probably PAs out there in the middle of the Gaslamp District, you know.
Oh, it's probably an agency.
Maybe, yeah. 6:30 in the morning, just handing out cups of coffee. And I was like, huh, what's this Falling Skies shit about? And, you know, here I am years later plugging their show, and I love
it. Totally.
But the thing about the panel itself that I guess I should talk about is how incredibly in love this cast is. And they talk about how, you know, they spend all their time together. They shoot basically constantly. They have all this respect for each other, and it just shows. There's so much warmth and so much love. And Will Wheaton is such a huge fan of the show that he kept everything very lively and very funny. And he knows them all very, very well, because he does like an after show. After Falling Skies airs, Will Wheaton has like a, you know, a chat with a cast and things like that. Some of the highlights, Moon Bloodgood, actually her character in the show gets pregnant. And right after her character in the show got pregnant, she got pregnant in real life. And there is a scene in the show where her character is going to give birth to the baby, but Moon Bloodgood was actually like 9 months pregnant when they were doing the birthing scene.
So
and
crazy.
So all the actors are crowding around her saying like, push, push. And then Noah Wiley was joking like, well, don't push that hard because they didn't want the real baby to come like flying out while they're shooting the scene. they also said that they had to write the entire third season around her pregnancy. So there's a period in the third season, which is airing now, where her character disappears for a while. And it's all because, you know, she had to go on maternity leave for a while. But, you know, a really, really well-written show, a lot of passion. The cast is great. And definitely, you know, check out Falling Skies. If you haven't given it a shot, it's totally worth it. The seasons, are, I think, are 10 episodes each. So it's not something that at this point you can't catch up on.
I think the first two seasons are on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, definitely go for it. It's worth it. If you guys want to borrow the Blu-rays, I can lend you those too, because I have them.
Like the whole anybody listening or just us three?
Anyone listening.
Really?
No. I'm not going to give you my Blu-rays. Matt, tell me about The Supers.
After How I Met Your Mother, Melissa was like, we have to stay. There's a panel called The Supers I want to see. And it was one after another panel called The Originals or something. A lot of the names I noticed in the panels, but The Originals was about vampires and I tuned out about halfway through. And then The Supers is
there's nothing actually, wrong with vampires.
Oh, there are so many vampire shows. It's just I can't even keep up. I have no idea who is who and what
was
they're
about.
Was
it The Vampire Diaries?
It's a new series from The Vampire. It's like a shoot-off series from The Vampire Diaries called The Originals.
Yes.
There were some three hot dudes and two hot ladies on the panel, and then they just talked about being vampires. And they were, I will say this, super gracious and awesome dealing with the fans and like the most ridiculous questions I've ever heard in my life. Every one of them was like just very grateful to be there and very like happy to talk and answer whatever questions got thrown at them. And some of them were absolutely ridiculous. So it was like, when are you going to take your shirt off next? And the guy's like, ugh, you know. But it was good. It was good. So The Supers is actually Seth Meyers from SNL and soon to be Late Night with Seth Meyers fame made a show about a super like an Avengers style super team. And the leader decides to leave. And when he leaves, he kind of through a series of errors ends up leaving the team to his son who doesn't really have any superpowers. And his son's played by Seth Meyers. And then the team kind of just dissolves. So the series starts with Seth Meyers' character, Proc, going around and trying to put together a team. And he finds out that like all of the, they're rated by like 1 through 10 rating system superheroes are in this world. And he finds out that like all the 8 and up superheroes have basically said no, that they're not going to join the team. So there, he's like, all we can get is like 7 and below. And he's like, well, I don't want to get 7 and below. And they're like, well, we could go through the reject pile, which is like all the superheroes that tried out before and got rejected for one reason or another. And the first episode that we got to watch at the panel follows him going and meeting all these different people and kind of recruiting the team. And I'm not super in love with the animation style. It's kind of that not South Park style, like I guess Aqua Teen kind of style. Like the drawings are okay, but it's very flat looking.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not super in love with the animation, but the story was hilarious. And the show was actually really funny. I mean, they had a room of a couple thousand people laughing like out loud while watching this. And that was pretty impressive because I've seen other showings where people just sit dead quiet during.
So painful, isn't it? You're like, oh, man.
Yeah, I'm like, I can't imagine being the creator and being like, wow, no one likes this.
Like, I'm fucked.
but it was really good. I will have to say Keenan from SNL, Keenan Thompson, actually steals the show. His character, I wrote a little article you can read on Nerd Appropriate about the show. But Keenan's character is hilarious. His name's the Impresario, and he has mommy issues essentially, and it is like everything he does it was cracking the audience up so bad. But a huge cast of SNL alum, writers and actors, and a guy from the Mindy Project, and Josh Myers is in it too, Seth's brother. Just really great cast and really well written and good overall. So The Supers is coming to Hulu, I think next week it starts. I think if you have Hulu Plus on Xbox.
Yeah,
if you have Hulu Plus on Xbox, you can watch it now, but I think it comes to Hulu proper next week. So that is The Supers. Seth Meyers.
Awesome.
Video games.
I want to hear about Rise.
So there's a lot of video games now at Comic-Con, and they actually, I mean, for
sort of weird, right?
Yeah, they moved them this year. Like,
yeah,
they used to be down by all the big, like, Lionsgate and Sony and all that stuff, but now they moved them to the other side of the hall, so they're like past like all the really indie stuff. Like in the corner, they put a lot of gaming stuff. And Microsoft actually had another an offsite gaming lounge, which was huge. I mean, it was not even a lounge; it was like a gaming stadium set up in a hotel that I didn't even check out to the last day. So I ran down there to check out the Xbox gaming lounge, and I got to try out Rise for the Xbox One. So I got to actually play an Xbox One, which was cool.
Do you have any remarks about the controller or the system itself?
I loved the controller. The first thing I noticed is it felt smaller, which some of you guys may like and some of you guys may not like. It's definitely, it's not much smaller than the current Xbox 360 controller, but it definitely feels more compact. It was really, it was, I guess the best way to really describe it is everything just felt tight and very, very smooth.
What?
All right.
I heard that
the sticks were tighter.
The sticks are tighter. That's what I'm trying to say.
So okay.
Everything just felt
smoother on the sticks.
Smoother on the sticks. Yeah.
Yes.
Describe. The controllers just felt wonderful. I love the way that the controller felt in my hand. Tight and smooth.
Okay. Is this a Carlos Danger text conversation that we're having right now? What's going on?
Best name ever.
Yeah, really, the guy's a genius. Anyway, I did get to try out Rise. I wasn't entirely impressed with the game. For those that don't know, it's a Crytek game. Looks beautiful. Sounds beautiful. In terms of the controls, I mean, the problem with Rise that I had is I could tell that it at one time was a Kinect-only game that was ported over to have controls because the combat was not fluid. And I hate to compare it to other games, but when you have games like Batman Arkham City that exist in the world that have combos and encounters and things of that nature, that is a really high bar, right?
Man, and the game that broke all combat systems.
It
ever.
Really did. I mean, like, and Assassin's Creed is great too, but Batman, in my opinion, was even better. So then you get a game like Rise, which has a combat system, but what I played, the first 20 minutes of it or 15 minutes of it, were a little bit simplistic.
You were like, Xbox, throat stab.
Yeah, well, it wasn't as smooth or as tight as Batman.
Did you have to kick your leg to curb stomp somebody or issue commands vocally?
No. If the Kinect, the new Kinect was actually set up to this one, I did not notice it.
It is a launch title. Like, what are you going to do? You know, like, maybe it's better to compare this game to Cameo Elements of Power or Perfect Dark Zero or some shit like that.
Exactly. And to be honest, it wasn't. I didn't walk away thinking like, oh, this is a horrible negative experience. I walked away being like, that was actually kind of fun. I want to see what happens with the story. And, you know, the combat's not great, but I'll still play it. You know, I'll still play it. If anything, you know, maybe red box it, whatever. But
I'm sure it's no Steel Battalion heavy armor.
No, it's definitely, I didn't want to shred it and like and destroy it. No, it wasn't that bad. Also briefly played Saints Row 4. Don't really have to say too much about that. I played that for a good half an hour. Just loved it. You know, ran around, Mainly played with the dubstep gun. Yep. Just because it was hilarious. I actually took my headphones off at one point and handed them to my wife. And I'm like, just listen. Like, I ran around dubstep gunning everything for... And it was so much fun. And while I was on board the Jackdaw, I actually played the PlayStation 4. 3? 4? What are we on? 4?
4.
4.
There we go. PlayStation 4. I played Assassin's Creed 4 multiplayer a bunch of times on the PlayStation 4. And it was awesome. That controller feels so much better than the PS3 controller. They just made everything... much more concise. The sticks are, you know how the sticks in the PlayStation 3 are kind of loose and janky?
Yep. They're too tall. That's why they're so janky feeling.
It just, everything worked this time, and it didn't take any getting used to. Like, every time I switch over from my Xbox controller to my PlayStation controller, I'm like, fuck, like, this feels like a toy.
Yeah.
Are they a little heavier, too? I hate how light the controllers are on the PS3. I know it's a weird complaint, but...
No, I know exactly what you mean. They are, they're a lot heavier. I mean, they feel heavier. Everything just felt nice, you know.
Or sturdier, I guess is maybe a better word.
And Assassin's Creed 4 multiplayer was awesome. We did different assassination missions, and the maps looked beautiful.
Is it still just like deathmatch and sneak around deathmatch?
Two different modes. I did one mode where you could, you'd have to basically, you'd have a target, you'd have to track your target, hide, assassinate your target without getting assassinated yourself.
Yeah.
And the other mode I did, they let you actually modify the game mode sort of GoldenEye style, mm-hmm. where you can, tweak out different game parameters. And they actually had it set to where you could only use guns. It was the only way you could kill your target was with a pistol kill.
Wow.
We played a couple rounds like that.
Seems a little counterintuitive for Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of that mode, but it was still fun, very cat and mouse. And again, the game looked beautiful, played wonderfully well, and no complaints. And I was in the fucking belly of a pirate ship when I played it. How cool is that? Like,
oh, that's kind of cool.
Coolest thing ever. I'm like playing this pirate game in a pirate ship, which was awesome.
The real problem with Assassin's Creed multiplayer is the people that play Assassin's Creed multiplayer. And it's never like, it's never been the fault of the game itself that it never works out the right way, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you can continuously give these people, like, 100 points for just running up and killing somebody, and then I can continuously get 2,000 points, and they just never get it.
Yeah. No, it's not your typical, FPS, which is weird for a
moment. I mean, because it's not an FPS. It's a, mm-hmm. It's like a...
That's typical.
It's an action-adventure.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
It has more in common with the ship than it does with, like, Halo, you know?
Ship. I remember the ship.
Yeah, the ship.
So anyway, that was a lot of fun. I'm glad I got a chance to try those games out, and it's always nice. I went to some gaming panels and stuff too, but I think there's write-ups on nerdappropriate.com about those panels that I went to, so we don't have to go back into those. But Matt, tell us about the casting director's panel that you went
to. It's a little different. It's the only reason I wanted to talk about this one. Melissa, my wife wants to sorry, I listen to a lot of Comedy Bang Bang. Wants to act. She likes acting. She wants to get into it. And I was like, well, there's professional panels at Comic-Con. Let's try a couple. One of them was a gigantic letdown, which I won't even mention or talk about. The other one was really awesome, and it was casting directors. And they had the head of casting for Disney, who did all of the Marvel movies. They had the head of casting for CW, who does all the TV shows on CW. And they had the head of casting for Walking Dead and Breaking Bad. And then another guy who's the head of casting for a film, I don't remember which production company, but did Titanic. He does like massive movies. And they just had a really awesome, honest, and frank discussion about what going through the casting process is like, how to get there, what they do on a day-to-day basis, and what they're looking for. And it was really, really interesting, even to me, who has very little interest in getting into acting or anything like that. It was neat. It was really cool. The numbers are completely daunting. It's insane. They said they get something like $1,500 people to look at like a week or something. It was insane. And then the woman who does Walking Dead was talking about how she'll find out like on a Thursday that by Tuesday she needs to fill 24 roles before the show starts filming on the next Tuesday, like weekly. Like that'll happen just every other week. They'll be like, oh, we need 15 people for this scene. And they might, 10 of them have one line or none, But she's then got to roll through like 600 different applications and then narrow that down to 50 and then have those 50 come in to do read-throughs and then get those read-throughs approved and then go, you know, like it, the process was crazy. But it was really, really, really interesting and really kind of awesome to hear what that – it made it seem, even though hard, it made it seem doable, if that makes sense. Like even though the numbers sound crazy and it sounds like you'll never get through that kind of like lake or ocean of people to surface the top, it also made sense, like the stuff that they were saying, you know, like how and why and what the different reasons are and what you need to do and what they're looking for in general that will, you know, kind of move you up the chain just a little bit even. Or, you know, it was really cool. And they told stories about how, you know, like one of the girl from Disney, or the woman I should say from Disney, kept talking about how Helmsworth, she knew like day one. And drooled over Tom Hiddleston and like how amazing he is, and that he actually came in and initially read for Thor, and they were like, ah, he's just not right for Thor, and she was like, we got to bring him back in. He's perfect for Loki. I just know he's that good, you know. And they said he'd come in and just read Loki, like off, just do it like a day later without any issues, like just talking about professionalism, and it was really, really super awesome. Cool. And
did you see what Hiddleston did at the? The Avengers panel?
I looked it up. I didn't see it.
What did he do?
He came out in the full Loki costume.
Did he really?
And did a monologue for like a good 2 or 3 minutes.
Wow.
That was brilliant. He basically had Hall H in the palm of his hand just like screaming Loki lines. It was just the coolest thing. Of course, I wasn't there, but you know, yeah, just the footage of it's great.
That's the hardest day to get in Hall H. She said that he is by far the best actor. Like she quoted Kenneth Branagh who auditioned him for Thor. And Kenneth Branagh said that if there's an actor's heaven, like his quote was like, if there's an actor's heaven, Tom Hiddleston is Jesus or something like that. Like it was like crazy. It was like nuts how much these guys respect him in his field. And they said that he's just unbelievable. And one of the really interesting things we heard was one of like the LA, it was a bunch of like, you know, I'm a working actor, like, you know, asking questions. And he asked, why are so many Australians and Brits getting a lot of the roles right now? Like a lot of, if you look at it, you'll notice that the vampire shows filled with Australian and British cast. Like it's unbelievable how many people are not American that they're casting for these shows. And every single casting director answered exactly the same and said professionalism. Said the British people, the Australians, the Irish, they show up. They're ready with 5 different read-throughs of their character. They'll do another character if you ask them to. They're on time. They're never late. They're like ready to go right that moment. She was like, you know, if we have 20 people come in, 5 Australians, 5 British people, and 10 LA, 10, you know, California people or Americans. She's like, all 5 Australians, all 5 British people come in ready to go. She's like, LA will have 3 that won't make it because of traffic. 1 is sick. 2's only got 1 read-through. The other 3 kind of didn't really remember their lines. She's like, every single time. And she attributed it to, if you're going to move from Australia all the way to California to become an actor, move away from your friends, move away from your family, you're not going to half-ass it when you get there. You know, it's a job and it's professional and you need to be ready to go. And it was advice that I think you can take to almost any career, any field. You know, like if you want to do this for real, whatever it is, it's a job. Even if it's acting, even if it's creative or art or something, like this is still work, you know?
Yeah.
It was a really good point and just done pretty well. So
that
was the casting directors. It was neat. It made me want to go to more of those kind of professional panels next time. It's interesting to hear opinions from people in the field.
That's cool. It's always good to hear those panels that inspire you. And every year I hit one that someone will say something and it just like lights a fire under my ass. And I'm like, all right, I fucking get it. Like, and it's usually a panel where I'm not expecting it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I love those panels. And, you know, like we said before with the show, Comic-Con in a way inspired us to start the site and do the show in the first place.
Yeah.
So it's like it is. And even, you know, my wife, every time that she goes, she wants to do more now and loves this stuff. So it is neat. And like, I have a lot of love for Comic-Con because it's there to celebrate all the things that we really appreciate. So,
yeah. So you got to go to a panel that I did not, because I went to How I Met Your Mother. I actually had tickets to this panel and I sold them to our friends so they could go. Not sold them like in a weird way, but you know,
yeah,
they bought them from me for the whatever.
$400.
Yeah. I upcharged.
Yeah. So, Joss Whedon did one of those Nerd HQ conversations for a cause. So it was Joss, speaking to an audience of about 250 people. And actually, Zachary Levi was resting his voice on that day. So Nathan Fillion was actually the moderator for the panel, which led to a lot of ridiculous hilarity because Joss Whedon and Nathan Fillion are like the best of friends and have like so much admiration for each other that it was just, you know, nice to see the two of them hanging out and kind of goofing off together. But, you know, I've been to Comic-Con for many, many years now, and every time I have the opportunity to see Joss Whedon speak, I go for it because there's always something new. I never feel like if you see the same panels year after year at these things, a lot of the people will start repeating themselves and tell the same stories over and over again. That definitely did not happen at this panel. First of all, I'm terrified at how much this man works. Like, he was kind of explaining like what he's doing right now and kind of how he gave a portion of his soul to Marvel to like do these Avengers films. He's like, basically for the next 3 years, I don't have free time for 3 years. Yikes. He's like, I don't have any time. He's like, you know, we're in pre-production now for the Avengers. I'm working on S.H.I.E.L.D. at the same time for ABC. And he's like, and then when that's all done, I have to do, you know, post-production on the Avengers. And then who knows what's, you know, after that. But he's still very excited and passionate about the project. So he was obviously there to talk about Avengers 2, Age of Ultron, which got announced at Comic-Con. He talked a little bit about casting and how hard casting is and how he's going to have a really hard time casting Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch for Avengers 2. But I think the thing about the Joss Whedon panel that really was moving was he talked about his childhood for the first time that I've ever heard him talk about it. So you always kind of wonder, like, well, what happens? Like, how do people that are essentially creative geniuses get that way? And he said when he was a kid, his mom was a writer. He came from a family of writers, but his mom had a time set aside from like, I think he said from like 6 to noon every day where he was literally not allowed to make noise. Like he couldn't play out loud. He couldn't watch TV. He couldn't make a sound. It was like his mom's writing time. And so it was, in a way, he resented it a little bit. And he said like one of the things that inspired him to be the man that he is today was neglect. And he used to just come up with these scenarios in his head and create these worlds in his head. And he said he used to go for these long walks up and down his driveway and just create these worlds as he would walk and basically just have these internal dialogues with himself in order to pass the time.
That's crazy.
And it is crazy. Like, and you think like, well, that, you know, could have gone terribly wrong. Like,
yeah,
well, right. And then he became a sociopath.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it was just weird. And I think like that would never fly in a Hall H, but it would definitely fly in a really small, intimate Nerd HQ panel. So, you know, if you guys are listening to this and you have the opportunity to go to Comic-Con, you know, definitely follow the Nerd Machines Twitter feed and wait till they announce these panels because they are worth, you know, the $22, and all of the money goes to Operation Smile for charity. So, awesome. I mean, the people that are on these panels do them out of the kindness of their own heart. And then you get to see some really cool, intimate stuff that you wouldn't get to see otherwise. So really, really brilliant stuff from Joss Whedon at that one. And I know, Matt, you were super excited for Ender's Game, which is one of your favorite books, and now is going to be a film with Harrison Ford.
Yes.
So what did you see at this panel?
There's a bit of controversy surrounding this, is there not?
They addressed it. It was pretty awesome.
Okay.
I was walking to the con on Thursday. I had a horrible Thursday. I will just start that off saying, for reasons that don't need to be said. But it was horrible. So I was by myself. I kind of hi, Stoli.
Sorry.
No. So I kind of separated myself from the group because it was one of those like rage days where I was like, I'm going to blow up on somebody that I don't mean to, and it's going to be mean. So I'm going to go. And I was walking past the Hall H line. And I mean, it could have been, I'm not saying anybody specific. It had nothing, what I was angry about had nothing to do with everybody I was around. It was one of those, like, you know, rage days.
I was just thinking about, I should go.
Yeah, I should go.
Yeah. And he wasn't mad at me, guys. Just,
no. Oh, okay.
We actually had a wonderful lunch on Wednesday.
We did. We should mention that. We actually got to have like a little nice, intimate
sit. Whoa.
We were all nude.
Ate
burgers nude.
Ate burgers and chicken strips and hung out for like an hour, and it was great.
It was good. But yeah, so I was walking past Hall H and there was no line, which I have never in my entirety of going to Comic-Con seen. So I was like, screw it, I'm going to get in line. And I had no idea what was in Hall H that day. I just got in line for it. I was in within 5 minutes. I was in Hall H. I've never been in. It's gigantic and it's kind of amazing. I can see why people wait in line. Not quite as long as people do, but it is pretty magical when you get in there. And one of the panels I saw was Ender's Game, and it was pretty much the whole cast and the director and the producer, or the whole, like, the big name cast, I guess I would say. They didn't bring, like, all 400 people that were in the movie there. So to talk about what you said, Scott, yeah, the controversy is essentially Orson Scott Card came out against gay marriage. I don't remember exactly what he said. From what I've heard different reports as to how bad it really was, but I guess he came out against gay marriage. Somebody asked the question. People actually booed when they asked the question, I guess because they've addressed it before, supposedly. I have never heard them say anything to it, but the producer took the answer and just said, look, we have a really diverse crew that worked on the movie. We would really hate it if less than 1% of the crew that did work on the movie, which he was referring to Orson Scott Card, were to say something, were to hurt the chances of this movie doing well, just because there were a lot of people that worked on the movie, and not everybody shares this opinion, including us. He's like, we are an LGBT friendly group. He's like, there's nothing in the movie that is anti-gay in any way, and you know, he's entitled to his opinion, and we're entitled to ours. So. That was that kind cool. of. He was like, "That's what we're gonna say," you know.
Yeah.
So handled it well. He worded it. That's not obviously an exact quote, but he handled it pretty well, and then kind of shut it down. Like, we're just not gonna. This is not a point of discussion for us because it's not what the movie's about.
Right.
And Harrison Ford's come out against it too. I think the big names have kind of come out. Like, look, this is ridiculous. You know, we don't all feel this way. It's just one guy who said something. Just because he wrote a book doesn't make his opinion more valid than anyone else's. But. The first thing is the director, Gavin Hood, who did the first Wolverine movie, which is terrible. although I would argue not necessarily directed terribly, the story is absolutely atrocious. What does that mean?
It'd be
atrocious and...
abusive.
Abusive. It's abusive and atrocious. That's true. but he came up and was so excited to be in Hall H. It was unbelievable. He was like... practically jumping up and down on the stage. Like, the producer was videotaping the whole thing, and he was like, he's doing this for me. I've never been up here before. This is amazing to me. Like, thank you so much. And like, he was crazy excited. And he just talked about making the movie and how much he loved the book when he read it, you know, when he was younger. And he's really excited about being able to take this material and turn it into a movie. They brought Harrison Ford out, and his voice in this movie is like Morgan Freeman, like it's just iconic sounding. And when he does some of the lines from the book, I heard it on the preview trailer or whatever it was like a bunch of cut up scenes. Just sounds awesome. And the movie honestly looks great. Like I was not super excited about the movie in the sense that I didn't think it would actually be good because of Gavin Hood and it seems like a weird book to turn into a movie. Everything I saw looked fantastic, and I'm now very excited for it. I'm hoping that it will look as good as the stuff I saw cut together. The Academy looks amazing. Like, the scenery in the movie looks phenomenal. So, and the costuming and everything, just like, it looked awesome. It looked really, really great. So I am pretty excited, or I would say now my excitement is for real, as opposed to before it was just, yeah, it was like, I might be excited about this. I'm not sure. And now I'm like, I'm definitely excited about this. So
cool.
Awesome.
Very cool. Very cool. And I also have to say, I would like to nominate Chris Hardwick, who is possibly one of the best moderators for a panel I've ever heard in my life. He managed Hall H, like, as a whole for not only a movie preview, but for one with Harrison Ford in it, with Harrison Ford on stage, and he did it flawlessly. Like, I mean, just ran the panel like nothing, and it was awesome. And there was plenty of stuff that went wrong, and he, you know, would crack a joke and everything would be fine, and he'd move on. a guy, there was two panels actually. It was Divergent, the movie coming out, and Ender's Game, like in one panel. And a kid got up and asked a question about Ender's Game for the Divergent questions. And everybody started heckling him, like, immediately. And then Chris Hardwick started heckling him, but, like, in a nice, kind of funny way. And he heckled him for, like, a while. And then he brought him back up so that he could ask his question for Ender's Game. And the guy took it in stride and actually said, "I love Divergent," like that, like, was the first words out of his mouth. And everybody just started laughing. And then he had a pretty okay question. But it was good. It was a really great preview for the movie. I'm excited for Ender's Game now.
Oh man, you have me excited too. I mean, I love me some Harrison Ford, so I want to see him kind of, you know, doing his thing again. You know,
it's like a gruff character that he plays. Like, he plays a really kind of mean, almost mean spirited character, seemingly throughout the story.
So it probably suits him well.
It suits him very well, and that's why his voice seems so awesome in it. Like, when you just hear it as like a voiceover on the preview, it just is like, this is it. This is what I kind of pictured, you know.
Yeah. So I got to interview Jane Espenson, and if you are a fan of writing, you might know who she is. But if you don't know who Jane Espenson is, Jane Espenson's probably written many of the things that you are a fan of. Mm-hmm. She wrote a lot of Buffy. She wrote a lot of Warehouse 13. She's currently writing Once Upon a Time. She wrote a bunch of Battlestar Galactica. I mean, honestly, Firefly, Angel, like, she has done so much of the television that I, like, genuinely love. I was actually super nervous about doing this interview because, sure. I mean, because I admire her so much as a writer and as a person. She's just like a super cool, you know, hyper intelligent, like, you know, Joss Whedon jokes about her all the time. Like, when you hear him talk, he always talks about Jane Espenson, and he's like, Jane Espenson will, like, write an entire script for a television show, like, as they're having a conversation talking about something else, she'll just, like, pull a script out and be like, "Oh, I just finished it." She's just, like, one of those super genius writers. And so I got to interview her for the site, and we'll have that on that interview on the next episode. And I just want to say it went really well, but I had nightmares about the interview the night before.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it doesn't happen to me all that often, but and I'm not making this up at all. I woke up at like 3 a.m. the day before I was supposed to do this interview, and I was having dreams that all my recording equipment wouldn't work.
Oh,
and
my God.
Like, and my phone, like, I just remember, like, hitting my phone and, like, and my mic and stuff, and all of it was just, like, falling apart and, like, shattering. And I was just, like, staring at it like, no. And I was, like, trying to, like, save the interview, and I was, like, frantically, like, writing shit down. But it actually ended up working. And so you'll get to hear that conversation with Jane Espenson, which was
cool.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm excited about that one. So also a group of super creative and insanely genius people, the Visionaries panel. So what was that about, Matt?
Yeah, it's a panel that Entertainment Weekly put on. This was the one I actually walked into in Hall H without knowing what it was. And I sat down, I looked up at the screen, and it's Edgar Wright, Mark Webb, and Alfonso Cuarón. And if you don't know who those guys are, Mark Webb made Amazing Spider-Man and 500 Days of Summer. Edgar Wright did all the things you love, including Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, the upcoming This is the End, and he's doing Ant-Man for Marvel, among other things. He made Spaced, I think, was the show he did for BBC. And then Alfonso Cuarón, probably the one that we would all know him from the most or the best would be Harry Potter 3. He did
the best one,
Prisoner of Azkaban. It's the one with, like, the most, like, pathos to it, I feel like, or the most, like, intensity, which is kind of what he brings. He also did Children of Men, which is one of the best movies ever made.
Gravity looks fucking crazy.
Gravity looks insane, and it's a passion project. He's been working on it for 4 years, and has just, like, it was this concept he had that he just kind of brought out of nowhere. And Gravity is the preview that, if you've seen it, is basically Sandra Bullock gets, like, knocked out into space off of the space station, and they lose her. And then the whole movie, from what I understand, takes place between George Clooney's voice, I guess, maybe him, and Sandra Bullock floating in space, and them
so
trying to
crazy
them wow. trying to get her back. So it looks super intense and just kind of nuts, but it was just about them talking about the kind of craft of story making and directing, and what they go through in the movie making process. Even though these are, like, three creative forces? Like, do they still deal with studios, and how does that work? And, you know, how do they get some of these crazy things through? And, you know, what is the process to come up with some of these ideas that they come up with? And it just was really, really great to listen to these guys talk about how they come up with and then make the things that they love. And, you know, Mark Webb talked about getting Spider-Man, and it was the same kind of thing that you noted about Joss Whedon, which was, he was like, look, I just basically was like, I want to do this. You know, this is a character that I love, and I feel like I can do him in a great way, and had to kind of pitch it to Marvel. And I think that's Fox or Sony, to actually get it. And same thing, had to give up chunks of it. I mean, these movies take years for these guys to make. And as a director, he's involved in pretty much every step of the process. So, it was really, really great. Edgar Wright, I tweeted this. So if you were following the Nerd Appropriate Twitter feed, you saw this, but Edgar Wright probably had the quote of the panel, which was, they were talking about being original and making new things. And he just was like, look, if we don't do anything original, if we stop making original stories, there'll be nothing to remake in 30 years, you know, like. And everybody started laughing, but you start to think about it and you're like, wow, that's kind of weirdly true. Like, if we just do nothing but remakes, we come up with no originality and like no original stories, and we don't get these things through, then, you know, what is everybody going to do in
really
the future?
Explore yourself. That's a really
but their point being that, like, they were like, look, if you want to make a movie, make it. Like, you can. The technology is in your laptop now. Like, it's no longer this crazy, you know, $100 million process where you have to have film and you have to have a staff of, you know, 80 people. They're like, get your friends together, get a couple of cameras and shoot a movie. They're like, it could be 5 minutes. If it's great, then it'll be great. You know, like, don't talk about it. Don't think about it, like, plan it and do it. And, it was awesome. It's awesome to listen to these three. And that's pretty much what Edgar Wright said. That's how he started. He was like, I just kind of started doing it. And Cuarón said the same thing. And they talked about having mentors and how important that is in the process. And it was a really great panel to listen to these three very accomplished directors talk about how they got there and how they craft. So
that's cool. I mean, again, that's the whole point of Comic-Con, is to, you know, find inspiration from other people that are doing things that you really appreciate. So good stuff. Good
yes. Stuff.
So, final thoughts on Comic-Con? Hillary,
I want to hear Hillary's. Yeah.
Hillary. Poor Hillary was working the whole time again.
Actually, I was. I'm not joking. No, Comic-Con was amazing. I had a great time meeting a bunch of new people, including Rob Kaczynski and Shaday. I hang out with you guys. We miss Scott a lot.
Sorry. And,
I know.
I work a lot.
It would have been awesome, but your buddy Derek was there, so that was good. He was your fill-in.
What?
He was your fill-in.
I guess that's okay. I mean,
right? What was he?
Is it acceptable for someone to take my place?
Well, he didn't. He couldn't speak robots as much as you could, but he did okay.
He tried.
He tried.
I'll have to contemplate substitutions for future.
Contemplate.
Yeah, contemplate.
A contemplate?
Nobody heard that, right? Contemplate?
That's what I said. Yeah, setting booty traps.
Nice. Yeah, but the Comic-Con adventure was amazing, and can't wait for next year.
Awesome.
I'm going to be honest. Mm-mm. It is a pain in the ass to get into Comic-Con. It's a pain in the ass to get a hotel. It's a pain in the ass to wait in line for literally everything, like Starbucks, for 45 minutes. But it is absolutely amazing and always inspires me when I get out of it. It's always just this, like, you're just surrounded by creativity, literally, for 4 days. It's just creative people, creative stuff, like everything, you know, down to, like, looking at the posters while you're walking around the convention center, and there's like these gorgeous, like, Game of Thrones posters hanging up all over the place or whatever it might be. It's just 100% inspiring to do more, you know, if you have creative passions, I guarantee it will inspire you in some way to follow those in some form or fashion. But it is not easy to get there and to get going, but the moment you do, it's awesome. So it's worth it. It's worth the trouble. You know, August whatever rolls around at noon, you're going to be ready with your freaking mouse to click on buy immediately and get the damn ticket within a minute. So
yeah.
So it is, it's awesome. I always love. I always am there, and I'm like, do I want to come next year? And then by the end of it, I'm like, I want to come next year. It's awesome.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way. Like when I first got there on Thursday and I was walking around, I thought pretty much exactly the same thing. I'm like, this was a lot to get here. Like to get here, you know, all the way from the East Coast, and like, you know, there are literally days where we would have to like camp a hotel, you know, like getting like all of us would sit at our computers to get the hotel that we wanted.
And well, I mean, you got tickets by leaving Melissa's graduation to go buy them. I mean, Melissa, my wife was graduating college and Ash had to leave the graduation to go to an area with Wi-Fi so that he could buy the tickets because they were going on sale the same day that we were there.
Yeah. So I ran out of the graduation with a laptop to a Starbucks and got a couple tickets for people. So, so it's hard, but it is worth it. And it is, you know, this just this great celebration of all the things we here at the site love and appreciate. And it is also, you know, it's a reunion. Like, you know, we got to see Hillary and have lunch with Hillary. We ran into so many people that we've had here on the site who are wonderful, just like warm people that, you know, that are, you know, just friendly. And you're like, oh, wow, you know, thank you so much for, you know, coming on the show. And they're like, oh, you know, thanks for having us. And that's, to me, is just neat. And it's this community building that I really am a fan of. So, you know, I love Comic-Con and I've been going for a really long time, and you know, even if something weird happens and I am unable to get tickets, I'll be one of those strange people that just creeps on the outside of the show and has a good time doing that. So
awesome.
So it's great. Yeah.
So that's 114, and then stay tuned for 115, which should be coming out soon, which is going to be, I guess, now our annual Comic-Con interview spectacular. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Ash, why don't you take us home?
All right. So, guys, thank you so much for tuning in to Rated NA 114, which is our big Comic-Con episode. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. Or if you want to send us emails directly, you can send us emails Hillary1L, Matt, Scott, Ash at nerdappropriate.com. And of course, we're on Facebook. And
go to Facebook and look at Ash's. Well, first of all, like us, jerks, if you don't like us yet. Jeez. Was that mean? I mean, wonderful people. I love you all. Like us. Yes. No, but Ash put up a photo gallery, and I'm going to try and add, I don't have much, but I have a few to the Comic-Con 2013 photo gallery. So go check out the photos. Ash got some really great people dressed up and some great shots of the floor and stuff. So check that out.
Yeah, I'm going to be adding more to that too. I hadn't watermarked them yet, so I'm going to add more in a bit.
Yeah, because literally, Ash, every time you were taking pictures of everything, you were like, click, 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 click. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, I took a couple thousand pictures this year.
That's crazy.
So I only put up like 15. So
did you get any of Hillary touching people?
I did, actually. I snuck a couple pictures of Hillary signing things because I thought it was awesome.
Aw, yeah, that was really sweet of people to ask. And to be fair, there were a lot of people who came up, hey, I love Nerd Appropriate. So all of you folks that came up to tell me that, I really, really appreciated it. And yeah, we love you guys.
We do.
Awesome.
I was just kidding. You're not jerks. I was a jerk. and then Goodreads too, right? Go check out Goodreads. Search
Ready
for
Player
for
One.
Reading Ready Player One. Yeah.
And we'll see you guys soon.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Awesome.
My favorite part of that story, though, is Fermilier.
Fermilier.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
Did I say Fermilier?
You did.
Here we go.
Man.
You did it both times. No, I'm just kidding. Just once.
Whatever. I'm going to really watch how I speak now.
No, just let it ride, man. Just
can't watch how you speak.
Live your life.
Go watch it.